Call to order the business meeting for December 12th, 2023. Time is 10 a.m. All three commissioners are present. Becky, would you lead us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Becky. Kate, would you give us Zoom guidelines?
This meeting is streaming via Zoom and YouTube live with a link on Facebook. For those meeting in person, please remember to turn on your mic and speak directly into the mic when talking. For those joining us via Zoom, please remember to mute your phone or device when you are not speaking. If you forget to mute your phone or device, we will mute you. You will hear a voice saying you have been muted, and if you hear that voice, it is because we could hear your background noise. For questions during the meeting, please raise your hand. If you're not able to raise your hand, please wait until the commissioners ask for questions.
Thank you. Reva, would you give us public comment guidelines?
Good morning. The commissioners welcome public comment. Public comment is limited to 3 minutes per person. There's a timer in front of me. It'll be green while you have plenty of time left. It'll turn yellow when you have 30 seconds left, and it'll turn red when your time is up. It's more of a one-way street. This is your time to talk to the commissioners, not necessarily their time to respond. And I would note that if you have public comment regarding the sub-area plan, that will take place later in the meeting toward the very end. There's public testimony for that portion of the meeting. Public comment right now is for anything else.
Thank you. Do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
I will note that we have written public comment that was submitted by Kyle Wheeler for the record.
Nope. All right. Is there anyone in the chamber that would like to offer public comment before we move online? And if you're online and would like to submit public comment, please use the raise your hand feature. With that, we will move to the agenda.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve notice item resolution 23-387.
Second.
Good morning, Commissioners. Becky Butler, Budget Administrator, speaking to resolution 23-387 on your notice agenda. This is a notice of hearing for the fourth budget amendment for 2023. Notice of the public hearing will be published in the Chronicle December 14th and 21st. The hearing will be held on December 26th. Written comments can be submitted by mail at 351 Northwest North Street, Chehalis, Washington, 98532, or email at bocc@lewiscountywa.gov. Please include public comment budget amendment in the subject line. The notice pertains to all funds and reflects a revenue increase of $370,500, an expenditure increase of $2,061,846, and a change in fund balance of $1,691,346. The general fund portion of this amendment is $165,000. We do anticipate some changes as we get closer to year end and may have some emergency expenditures. The largest portion of this amendment is for some vehicles and other capital projects that we anticipate those expenditures to hit in 2024 or 2023. Those vehicles are for 2024 replacements, but we have to pay them in the year that they're received. Any questions?
No. Any questions? Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to approve one notice item, resolution 23-387. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 3-0.
Mr. Chair, I move we approve consent items resolution 23-388 and the minutes from the December 5th, 2023 business meeting.
Second.
Good morning, Commissioners. Grace Jimenez, Lewis County Auditor's Office, speaking to resolution 23-388. This is our weekly approval of warrants for the week of December 1st through the 7th. In the first section are the warrants issued on behalf of special purpose districts numbered 878106 through 878123. We issued 289 regular county warrants for a total payment of $856,261. Thank you.
Questions? It's been moved and seconded to approve two consent items, resolution 23-388 and the approval of minutes from the December 5th, 2023 business meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 3-0.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve 11 deliberation items, resolution 23-389 through 399.
Second.
Good morning, Commissioners. Doug Carey, Capital Facilities Manager, here to speak to resolution 23-389. This resolution will ratify the county manager's signature on a purchase order for furniture for the new community development offices. This purchase is through Byboard Purchasing Cooperative and totals, with tax and delivery, $173,383. During questions.
Can you remind me of the timeline for delivery on that, Doug?
This is probably March, April delivery. We will hold off delivery until the building is ready to accept furniture.
And that's for the entire building, right?
Yep.
Total square footage. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Morning, Commissioners. Matt Jager, IT Director, speaking on behalf of Resolution 23-390. This is authorizing the execution of a purchase order with Motorola Solutions for the five-year refresh of the hardware and software for our dispatch and records management system. This is on our strategic plan and funded via already collected ER&R funds for the planned replacement. And the total is $318,715 plus tax. Any questions?
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Eric Eisenberg, Housing and Infrastructure Specialist, here to talk about Resolution 23-391. This is the resolution that will adopt our 2024 state legislative agenda. On it includes five items: the North Lewis County Highway Interchange and Associated Improvements, Senior Services, Bedrock Tax and Assessment Capability Software, the Southwest Washington Fair Equestrian Upgrades, and the Lewis County Historical Museum Roof Replacement. If approved, I'll be able to deliver this document to our staff who will help work with our legislative delegation to try to make these things happen. Any questions?
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Thanks for your time on this.
Good morning, Commissioners. Josh Metcalf, Public Works Director. I'll speak to the next four resolutions. Resolution 23-392. This resolution will authorize the Chair of the Board of County Commissioners to sign local agency agreement and federal aid prospectus with WashDOT. This is for the Berwick Creek at LaBrie Fish Passage. This is County Maintenance Project 2001. The 2023-2028 six-year transportation improvement program was amended via Resolution 23-041 to add this project and the funding that we received from the federal protect, federal funding obligation. We received $1.168 million for construction. This grant funding has a 0% county match, and this will be for the construction of this project. Conditions of the protect funding require that the local agency agreement be signed by the chair of the board. Public Works and the County Engineer are recommending approval by the board for the chair to sign this agreement.
Thanks.
Question. Resolution 23-393. This is approving Public Works Director, myself, Josh Metcalf, and as the applicant agent, and Contract Administrator Robin Saline as the alternative applicant agent for federally declared disasters. This is for any future as well as currently open disasters. Approval of this resolution will specify Public Works Director as the applicant agent and Contract Administrator Robin Saline as the alternate applicant agent for all open and any new disasters to be declared between December 1st, 2023 and December 31st, 2024. Resolution 23-394, this is approving Salmon Recovery Funding Board grant agreement between the Recreation and Conservation Office and Lewis County. This is for the Berwick Creek at Logan Fish Passage construction project. This is in the amount of $387,006. This grant funding will be administered through the state of Washington, RCO, and the $387,006 a grant, the local match of 15% in the amount of $68,296 local dollars, county road funds. Conditions of this grant require this be signed by the board chair as well. And resolution 23-395, this is approval of a consultant contract with KPFF. This is for engineering services related to the Davison Road Bridge, Milepost 0.01. This project will include repairs to the structural components of the bridge. This is a federal award project. The request for proposals were issued in the Chronicle on May 11th and May 18th. We received only one proposal, and that was from KPFF. After a review of the qualifications, we deemed it responsive and meeting all needs for this project. This contract is in the amount of $350,718.91 for professional services. It does also include a management reserve of $25,000 for a not-to-exceed amount of $375,718.91. This resolution approved Public Works Director to sign this contract.
Questions?
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Charles Edmondson from Noxious Weed Control to speak on behalf of Resolution 23-396 to approve a agreement with the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest to restore funding for ongoing weed control in that area. This is the fifth modification to that agreement, and restores funding in the amount of $74,000 roughly that lapsed during COVID, and also weaves together multiple different agreements to streamline the funding process. The next resolution that I'm speaking on behalf of is 23-397 to appoint Ms. Valerie Eckloff to the Lewis County Noxious Weed Control Board as the representative for Weed District 4 after the expiration of the term of the previous holder of that seat.
Josh.
Resolution 23-398. This is declaring a state of emergency for the Coal Creek Drive long-term bank stabilization project in accordance with WAC 197-11-880 and WAC 173-27-040, parentheses 2D. This is in order to protect and also repair the project that was completed in 2017-2018 at the end of Coal Creek Drive. During the latest high water flows on the Cowlitz, we experienced some severe erosion at the end of the project, and part of the repairs that were done in that project were damaged significantly to the point of continued erosion at the site. So declaration of this emergency will allow us to get in there and address that immediately until we can get in under lower water flows and do a full assessment of the damage and identify a repair.
Is this to erosion going towards a road? Is that
yeah, this is the cul-de-sac that was installed as part of the repairs to the with the bank stabilization work that was done. We've lost a section of the large woody debris boulder structure that was put in place, and the water came over the top, and as it started to erode the cul-de-sac, getting towards the private properties adjacent to the river, as well as the damage has been done to the end of the county road at this point.
Is this similar to what was done at Newaukum as far as the repair?
Similar idea, different type of structure. These are similar root ball log structures, but they're anchored to large boulders with cables, and then the structure is tied together. So it effectively did its job. The structure didn't go down the river. It stayed relatively in place, but it has slid out of where it needs to be. So
will you have to move it back, or will you call or you
have we'll bring a contractor in to address the immediate need, and then we'll look at what will need to be done to reestablish the bank protection permanently.
I would assume this will be done as soon as possible.
Yes.
Okay. Misha?
Good morning, Commissioners. John Oppenhoff, Deputy Director of Public Health and Social Services, speaking to resolution number 23-399. And this resolution is a temporary reduction of the cost of adoption fees for adult dogs at the animal shelter, reducing it from $200 to $100 for the time period of December 16th through the 23rd. And the goal here is to get some additional dogs adopted and to be able to address our current wait list, which is up to 23 dogs as of today. 23 folks are wanting to own or surrender their dogs at the shelter.
And that $100 covers the vaccination and the spay-neuter cost. Is that essentially why we're keeping the $100 on there?
I don't have the details on the $100.
And do you know approximately how many dogs need to be adopted that they have currently there?
There are 14 dogs up there right now waiting to be adopted.
Be a great expose for the Chronicle to put a picture of every one of those dogs in the paper. It's been moved and seconded to approve 11 deliberation items, resolution 23-389 through 399. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 3-0. So before we enter into the hearing, I saw some folks come in before we, or after we started. If you're here to speak on behalf of this hearing that we're going to go into, I would encourage you to sign the sign-in sheet at the lectern up here. So we're now moving into a public hearing. We'll now call the hearing for Ordinance 1350. First, we'll have a staff report followed by a question and answer period. We will then close the question and answer period and open the hearing for formal testimony. Anyone wishing to testify, please sign the sign-in sheet at our lectern and you will have 3 minutes. If you're online, please use the raise your hand feature on Zoom. We'll now move for the staff report on Ordinance 1350.
Thank you. Mindy Brooks, Senior Long Range Planner. Also with me today is Preston Pinkston. We provided a very long presentation that was in a full overview of the Packwood Subarea Plan to the Board of County Commissioners on December 6th and continue that to December 9th. That presentation has been posted on the Packwood webpage for the public to review. So today's presentation is going to be much shorter. We're going to hit some high points and then talk about the testimony. Before you, I gave you a little packet. It has the testimony that was received by 4 p.m. yesterday. Those were emailed to you yesterday and posted in Packet Writer. Below that is testimony that came in after 4 p.m., and below that are the options that you requested regarding the short-term rental policies. Next slide, please. So these are all reminders to the commission here. The intention of the sub-area plan is to set goals for the future of an area. The plan is a compass. Next slide. The plan is a compass on all of these topics. So the plan literally says, where are we going on land use? Where are we going on housing? Where are we going on transportation? The plan does not include how we get there. Next slide. How we get there is phase two of the planning process. Once we've adopted those goals and policies that says where we're going on these things, then we will start figuring out how to get there. Next slide. Phase one, the subarea plan is adopted as an element of the comprehensive, the Lewis County Comprehensive Plan. And phase two is amendments to zoning maps, development regulations, and so forth to implement those goals and policies. We are only focused on phase one today. Next slide. Here is the map of the subarea plan boundary. This boundary is where the vision goals and policies will apply. This is where phase two, changes to development regulations, will apply. The goals, policies, and regulations will only apply here. They will not apply outside the subarea plan boundary. Next slide. So the subarea plan was created by the community. Staff facilitated the conversations. It is not our job to create the vision, goals, and policies. That is the job of the community. So we facilitate that, and we put the sideboards on around what is legal under the Growth Management Act. Next slide. Here's all the engagement that was done. I'm not going to walk through it. The results of each engagement activity are documented in Attachment A of the subarea plan. Next slide. Of course, the biggest part of creating the plan was forming a community advisory committee. These are full-time residents, weekenders, people who grew up in Packwood, people who found Packwood very recently, business owners, employees. They represent all the neighborhoods that make up Packwood. They are homeowners, they're renters. Their viewpoints are varied, which was really critical to creating this plan. Notes from every advisory committee meeting are found in Attachment A in that report. So if you want to see like how they arrived at the boundary or any of those things, we detailed all of that in that plan. I wanted to acknowledge we have a few of the members joining us today. So in the room, we've got Dennis in the back and Eric here from the advisory committee. And then online, we have Kathy, Gina. I think those are people online, so I just want to acknowledge them showing up today, which is awesome. I know this is hard for people to show up. It's the middle of the workday, but these people put such an amazing amount of time and effort into this. So I really want to acknowledge all of them, people who are here today, because it's just, this is really their plan. So they impressed me. Next slide. I want to read the vision. So this is the vision that the advisory committee came up with input from all of the other engagement. In 20 years, Packwood is a vibrant small town that embraces its history, encourages unique local businesses, provides a diversity of affordable housing options, supports existing and new residents, preserves the natural environment, encourages tourism, and promotes community events. Okay, we're going to move into the testimony. So again, you have testimony in front of you. We've received 10 pieces of written testimony. They are posted online. And we're just going to summarize what's in there. If you would like me to provide any more information on any of the testimony or the requests, just let me know and we can dive into the details. So, under the heading support, I split them up, support, requests, and opposition, and just summarized here. So under support, we have the reasons for support being managing growth that's already coming, containing commercial development, providing affordable housing, housing for workers, aging in place, continued support for regulating short-term rentals, Highway 12 safety, downtown walkability, and a sustainable economy. There are two requests that came in. One is a request for flexibility for short-term rentals, and another request, one property owner asked for a change to their zoning to higher density residential. And then one opposition saying do not regulate short-term rentals. So that's a summary of the testimony that's in front of you. Next slide. My last slide. And just a final reminder that there are options in your decision making, so you can approve the plan as it was recommended to you by Planning Commission and the Advisory Committee. You can approve that plan with specific amendments. Again, there are some options related to short-term rental that staff prepared that are in your packet. You may remand the plan to Planning Commission or to the Advisory Committee if you feel additional work needs to happen. Or you could not approve it. So you have a wide variety of options that you can entertain. So that is it for me, and I'll open it up for questions.
I do have a question about the person that was requesting to have their parcel zoned into, was it medium to high density? Is that something that we can make that change?
You can. Would you like me to pull up the information about that property and share it?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's right close to the medium density already. Is there a reason why we can't just...
Yep. So, Kate, would you pull up the maps there? So this is a zoomed-in map of the future land use designations, zoomed into the downtown area. And you see in blue there the two parcels that are requested. So they're in a low-density residential designation at this time. And that is what the advisory committee recommended. Low density would allow for single family residential, duplex, and ADU. It is dependent on the availability of water and septic. I want to note that sewer is not funded to serve the low density, more low density areas. It's a tight boundary that we're looking at with the funding we have. So regardless of what you zone this space out here, it's going to be dependent on septic because it is served by water, so that will set how much you can really get out of that site. Would you scroll to the next map, Kate? So your question, why did they go with it like that? So this is the map of the critical areas. There is a legend on the map, it's just a little bit lower, but I'll just explain what's in there. So what you're looking at is wetland soil, wetland and hydric soils, and the floodplain. So they did note in their testimony that they had a wetland delineation done. That was not provided in their testimony. I haven't seen it, so this is the data I have available and what the advisory committee used. So they felt that this suggested that septic in this area would be tricky because it's wetland, and so they recommended to stay with the low density in this space here. So that's where the advisory committee landed on this.
So this proposal was specifically asked of the advisory committee?
No, but these properties were specifically discussed as part of the advisory committee. So that land use map, the first map that Kate put up, we had very detailed conversations about what to include and what to exclude from the high density, the higher density, medium density, and we tried to avoid areas where you have hydric soil or, you know, stream buffers that would make that kind of development very difficult. So it was intentional where they drew the boundaries. This request did not come in until now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like it's also in the 100-year floodplain.
And that is the draft. Let me be clear that this is the draft floodplain, so this one hasn't been adopted, but it is our best available science.
Any other questions? We good to go?
Just one more. We have one in the packet there, written testimony, and I'm sorry, that one was submitted after the 4 p.m. deadline?
Yeah, so you have a stapled packet that was all the before 4 p.m. and then a single piece of paper. It is from Chris Murphy that was submitted after 4 p.m. So it just didn't get over to you in the email bundle, so I wanted to make sure you had that copy in front of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you summarize what Chris Murphy's?
Chris Murphy's is basically a request to not regulate short-term rentals, in summary.
Okay. Ready to proceed? Yeah. We'll now open the question and answer period, during which the public can ask questions. This is different then public testimony, which comes later. Now is the time to ask the staff questions. Is there anyone that would like to ask the staff questions? Is there anyone online that would like to ask questions? Please unmute yourself or use the raise your hand feature. We'll now close the question and answer period. Mindy, would you like your opening statements incorporated into the hearing?
Yes, please. Thank you.
We'll now open the hearing for public testimony. Please sign sign-up sheet on the lectern. You will have 3 minutes to submit testimony. Eric Owen.
And when you are ready to give your public testimony, we ask that you please state your name and your city of residence, and then I'll start the timer after that.
Okay.
And if you're sitting at one of these, you can push the button to the right, and that'll turn your mic on.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for letting me speak today. First of all, my name is Eric Oyen, and I represent Fiddleback Properties and Bird's Eye Investment LLC, both property owners in the Packwood area. I'm also a lifelong resident of East Lewis County, 44 years raised in the Cinnabar Morton area. So I have a pretty good history and understanding of the local area and what's transpired. As many of you guys know, or maybe know, my company and we've been responsible for the refurbishment of the Peters Inn building, bringing Arbor Health to town. We've got four affordable rental units, the Skate Creek Salon, and hopefully soon the Milltown restaurant will be opening up in Packwood. So we're pretty committed to the community and seeing its growth. So I have participated in the CAC meetings and the sewer meetings. I'm very supportive. Our companies are very supportive of the efforts and appreciative of Mindy's efforts to put all that together and everybody that's participated. I think there's been a lot of good things said. And I think the overall outcome is really good. We're just concerned that the current STR rules, the short-term rental rules that are being proposed as part of this plan will be somewhat counterproductive of some of the goals of the planning committee, and that being specifically that it will preclude, our feeling is that by restricting short-term rentals or using multifamily properties for short-term rentals, it will preclude very high-quality buildings from being built if we're not able to tap into some of the higher revenues from tourists. We're not opposed to there being some sort of restriction to provide, affordable housing for folks, but we feel like there should be some blend, maybe 50-50, that allows us to use our multifamily properties for short-term rentals. The reason is simply because with land costs in excess of $250,000 an acre, building costs over $300 a square foot, the type of properties that the community wants, high quality, is just not feasible to build those and not also rent a portion of them to out-of-town folks. As an example, we're currently looking at a building on our property that would be in the range of $8 to $9 million. This, of course, would happen once sewer is finally introduced into town. You'd have 25 housing units, 10,000 square feet of retail, office, very nice parking, very nice structure. But the problem is, with that type of price tag, there's no way that we could build it and then just rent it out to, medium to low income residents. So again, just in closing, I know my time's getting close, but we are very supportive of, of the efforts that have gone into it. We do believe in the need to provide affordable housing, but we feel that restricting multi-use properties to not be used for short-term rentals is not the way to achieve that, because it will not allow us to invest the type of dollars to build the properties that the town is looking for.
May I ask a question of that? What would be the difference in, say, an STR situation, or instead having that building zoned as, say, an extended stay motel hotel that might be allowed in there?
I guess I've never really looked at the revenue differences because we don't really own hotels. I just know that the short-term revenue from, tourists is probably one of the highest revenue streams you can have in a multifamily property. So that is the one necessary to support the buildings that we're looking at. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to kind of differentiate between, is this, would we really call this a STR, what you're proposing, or would this be more of a hotel type? And can I ask Mindy, Mindy to kind of clarify?
Yeah, sure. I'll just jump in for a second. I have spoken with both of them about their proposal too. So I think the ask is, Eric and their company would like to be able to provide a mix of affordable housing and housing that would be condoized and then allowed to be rented as short-term rental, because that will offset the lower rents that they're going to be getting from the low and medium income units. And so for them, if they went and switched to a different model like an extended stay, that would eliminate the affordable housing option. And I won't put words in their mouth, but I know that they also have businesses in their buildings, so having employees out there and housing for them is pretty important. So I think they're looking for that mix and just the flexibility. So, sorry, to paraphrase.
I guess I was just wondering if there was a way we could accommodate that mix.
We can.
Without bumping into the, this doesn't sound to me like it's what we think of traditionally as an STR, which is a separate dwelling.
Yep.
And this would be more of a multi-use building that would not necessarily come under an STR heading. And
absolutely.
So therefore wouldn't require a special carve out.
Absolutely. I think if we walk through the options that I provided for the short-term rental policy changes, a couple of those would remove the strict issues and give us black flexibility. So then when we work on the implementation, we can do exactly what you're saying and figure out how to implement it with that flexibility. So if we keep it at the strict, the require that multifamily not be used for short-term rental, then that would preclude what is being asked.
And you're proposing, you're proposing 50-50?
Yeah, 50-50 is, you know, would be a good fallback position for us. I think it would, you know, of the mixed-use buildings that we're talking about, it would be a really good mix just, you know, in terms of allowing the condoized units as well as half the building to be used as affordable housing and then supporting the retail and office spaces down below.
Have you seen this model work anywhere else?
Yeah, there's, you know, there's properties in Suncadia. The Suncadia Lodge is one. There's Silver Mountain Resort in Kellogg, Idaho. That's also under a similar type structure, retail on the first floor, and then condos and you know, hotels above. So similar.
And I believe
commissioners, may I recommend to keep in line with the appearance of fairness doctrine that we take testimony and then follow up with questions afterwards of all of the parties, to maintain the timelines for testimony.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Dennis. Reby.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Dennis Reby. I reside at 117 Robinwood Place in Packwood. I have been working with the CAC for the past 24 months and I'm extremely pleased and happy with the very thorough and well thought out document that you have before you today. I'd like to address a few of the important policies important to me and what I think are the highlights of the plan, but without shorting any of the other policies I'm not going to reference. Managing growth, especially in our community that has just taken off, as you are well aware, in the last couple, 3 years, is extremely important to provide for the community's benefit going forward. The sub-area plan is able to concentrate a lot of the new growth that we are experiencing and anticipate coming forward, while yet preserving the balance of our community as rural in nature, which is extremely important to the committee. Affordable housing, obviously a hot button all over the country, extremely important in Packwood. We are losing spaces for a lot of our service personnel, a lot of our medium and lower medium income families and or workers who are forced now to go to Randall Glenoma to find housing and residences, and is putting a real strain on a lot of our seasonal workers. The plan is providing for affordable housing, as I know you're well aware, and we think that in the plan, a good amount of affordable housing to satisfy our needs in the next 20 years will be provided. Highway 12 has taken on a whole new dimension in terms of how it relates to our community now that our tourism industry has come to town. As you're aware, Highway 12 is runs right through the center of town, and the state is aware that with this growing population, we have the need for bicycle and pedestrian pathways to provide safety and communication amongst the businesses in downtown. The sub-area plan will help firm up the needs of the community in the terms of highway improvements, and will allow us to go forward in working with the state to execute those improvements. Economy, businesses, and living wage jobs are critically important to the vitality of our community. With our new industry, tourism, we have a need for new jobs. Living wage jobs are coming. There have been a good number of jobs, I'm excited, that have hit town in the last 6 months. A lot of new employees and a lot of new opportunities for folks, and we need to keep that new business coming into town. I think the sub-area plan providing a firm direction.
Thank you, Mr. Reby. That's your time.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm going to ask if we can recess for 5 minutes during this. I'd like to recess, and I would like to meet with Mindy.
Of course you can.
And Eric and you and my.
The board is in recess until 10:45.
All right, we are back from recess, and we will continue with public comments. Following public comment, I'll give the commissioners an opportunity to ask those that have testified questions if they have any questions. David Campos.
Campos.
Can you state your name and residence?
Yeah, Dave Campos, Battleground, Washington. And I'm one of the owners of Commerce Meadows LLC. We purchased the mill property in Packwood approximately a year ago. We represent probably one of the larger contiguous properties impacted by this plan. And when we purchased, we were quickly drawn into the community, and we found a very well thought out citizen group that had a very forward facing plan. Excuse me. They asked us constructive questions, expressed concerns, and we were able to work within their framework on our proposal for our site. And we're just here to provide support for the sub-area plan.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the chamber that would like to offer public comment? With that, we'll move to online. Is there anyone online that would like to offer public comment? Please signify by unmuting yourself or raise your hand virtually. So that concludes public comment, but I'm going to give the commissioners, if you have any questions of those that offered public comment, to ask questions.
I covered mine.
Mr. Campos, can you tell me what, just kind of in generalities, what your vision for the mill site has been? Or that your company is looking towards?
Yeah, when we purchased it, we really didn't have any forward plan. We thought it had I spent a lot of time in East Lewis County. Once we met with Mindy and the town people and really saw the forward vision, we were able to integrate. But we have a vision that brings community commercial to town and allows for additional commercial use, attached product, a large amount of multifamily product for low and workforce housing, as well as some low density housing.
So ultimately your vision or goal there would be to create everything from commercial to long-term residential, short-term?
We have pretty much all the product types for a small town like that.
Remind me again of the size of the property. Do you remember off the top of your head?
Approximately 130 acres.
Can you show us on the map?
I don't think that map because it's too zoomed in, but pardon me. Do you have yesterday's presentation still available, or should I email it over to you? Okay, because we can move to the future land use map on there. While we're waiting for that, I would just say as soon as Commerce Meadows purchased the property, we were able to engage them in the community advisory conversations, which was really good. They were very open to having conversations with that group, which was nice. Okay. So their property, I'm sorry, Commissioner Brummer, this is still going to be a little bit hard for you because I did not adjust the color scheme yet. So the property is basically, so you see the red at the tail end as it comes down to the south there. It hits the gray. Mm-hmm. So the gray, the bright purple below, thank you, Dave's going to be my Vanna, I appreciate it. Yep. And it includes the medium purple, the dark purple, and one strip of the pink. So that's commercial business is the gray. The brighter purple is the high density residential. The lighter color purple is the medium density residential, and then that strip of pink is the low density. So basically they get all the zoning except for the airport district on their property. It's been adjusted So the version of that that was at Planning Commission got slightly adjusted because of the discussion with sewer. So this is a preferred location for sewer, but it was important to reserve approximately the same amount of commercial and high density to the advisory committee. And so we made some adjustments knowing that about 10 acres of the site would be used for sewer, so we adjusted some of the zoning lines to accommodate that. And I can't speak for them, but I think they're supportive of sewer.
We are, yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis, if I may ask, what was your opinion of the dynamic between the Citizens Advisory Committee that you sat on as far as the balance between the business owners, residential folks?
I was impressed and excited with the wide diversity of folks we had, and there were a lot of pointed discussions over the last 2 years as various items and elements came forward. There were some folks that were initially adamantly against the sub-area plan, as well as others, that, such as myself, that were really for it. We struck a good balance, and we struck good compromises during our planning processes to try to balance out the needs of everybody. So everyone was integrally involved, and the end result reflects that.
Eric, I'd ask the same question of you, if I may.
Yeah, Commissioner Brummer, I guess I'd probably echo those same sentiments. I felt like it was a good blend of local, residents with just a home or living there to, folks like ourselves and Dave there that have, a pretty high-level commercial interest in seeing the town grow in a responsible way. And I thought, Mindy did a great job of facilitating it, because those conversations can get pretty rowdy at times otherwise. So.
Thanks. That's all I have.
May I add just one other quick comment? Is having, in my previous life, been involved in planning efforts of this nature, along with substantial property rezones, substantially priced property rezones, things can get very contentious, but I would like to commend Mindy and the county staff for what I perceive has been an excellent, excellent organization and organizational setup to bring the entire community in through the numerous public open houses and publications, and open and transparent all the way through the last 2 years. I think it was very, very well done.
I appreciate that, and I'm going to jump in there as well, because I absolutely respect the process that has happened here, because it's been driven from the community to the government instead of the government driving it to the community. And I think that not only is unique in many ways where it tends to go the other way, but this has been a shining example of representative government where people have that input. And so I really not only appreciate the staff time and the work that's been done. I've sat in on some of those open houses, and as well the Planning Commission's discussion on this. I know there's not going to be 100% agreement no matter what happens, but the effort has been tremendous, and I believe this is a great example for how government's supposed to work, how planning is supposed to work. And so regardless, I think moving forward, this is going to be a positive for the Packwood community. So,
Mindy, did you have any other requests from citizens to, when it comes to their parcels, about zoning, changing zoning from either higher density or from higher density to lower density? Mm-hmm. Were there others?
There were, There were some others at Planning Commission that the Planning Commission entertained, and some of those were made, some were not made, and the only one that we have received further comment on was the one that's in front of you. So, without hearing back from those folks, I either assume they are satisfied or they are no longer interested. So an example, one that changed, the Huntington property was one of part of the remand back to the advisory committee. So the first round of hearing, what is known as the Huntington property, so it's behind the community hall next to the airport. There's a triangle piece of property that was sold, and the new owner asked to change the zoning that was applied to it, it actually spurred the discussion of the airport district. So when that was remanded, we took a really deep look at airport and uses around airports and had great conversation that included working with the state aviation folks and came up with that proposal there. So in that case, that we did change the zoning on their property to a whole different zone, but that person has not come back with any argument against it, so I can only assume that they're okay with it.
So question about the 50-50 aspects. So I would assume, and you can jump in to Eric to answer any of these questions, if we were to go with the 50-50 zoning, 50% would be retained by, I would assume, by your company, Eric, for
so
the short-term rental?
Let me clarify one thing, and then I absolutely want to let Eric answer the portions regarding the business and how that works. If you look at the options that I gave you guys for changing the STR policies, they're in front of you on paper, and then Kate, I gave you a copy. If you'll pull that up and zoom down to the last one, I have gave you multiple options, but my recommendation would be combine the two and to leave it pretty open, because what I'd like to do is not make it such a tight policy that we're making a decision on percentages at this meeting. So my suggestion would be to change it to say encourage a balance between short-term rentals and affordable residential housing options to support people working in and around Packwood. And then during phase two, allow us to continue to work with an advisory committee, which new people will be invited if they want to join in that conversation, so that we can come up with something that will work. And so we'll bring back then to Planning Commission and to you guys how we're going to implement that. You know, do we implement it through percentages like just, oh, well, 50% of the housing has to be a certain way, or do we do it a different way? And I have lots of ideas kicking around in my head. But so this would be my recommendation, is create a nice flexible policy and let us work hard on the right balance.
Okay. So then I guess my next question would be, with that in mind, a person that was to purchase a condo in a development like Eric's, say they're there during the summer and they're somewhere else, would they be able to short-term rental their condo?
So we can work on how we want to implement this, but this would direct us to say that we want a balance of allowing short-term rentals and we want to get affordable housing. And I think in discussing with Eric and Annie their approach, it would be an approach that would say, in this building, if we make sure that 50% are affordable, and let's be clear that affordable means below market rate, that's 80% AMI or under, then the others can be absolutely used as short-term rental. In a process like that, you are incentivizing affordable housing and offsetting it by allowing those condos to be used as short-term rental, meaning you can sell them for a much higher price. So an approach like that through implementation is one we should consider, but I don't want to lock myself into that, because I want to be flexible in how we figure out how to implement it, but I think there's a way to get at what Eric is asking for through, you know, implementing a policy like this. I think we can get to something that will work financially and will hopefully result in some 80% and below housing.
Okay. We good? We'll now close the hearing for public testimony.
Mr. Chair, in light of the discussions that we've had and the vast amount of time and information that's been brought to us, the testimony of the people, and the work that's been done by the planning staff, you know, they've had a year of time to bring this together and bring this to us. And we get just a matter of minutes to ultimately digest it. And I think we need to be extremely careful in the wording and what we do. And I would like to have the opportunity to dig as deep as possible into the testimony that's been provided and into the plan, although I know we've had had the plan presented to us, but also some of the options that have been presented to us. I think it would be extremely important for us to take slow steps here, get it right the first time. So with that, I would make a motion to close Ordinance 1350 to public testimony and recess this hearing to Tuesday, January the 2nd.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 3-0. Is there any announcements, new business? Press? Nothing. All right.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
We're adjourned.